Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Face Us, the radio show where we listen to your voice and talk about the corruption we all face every day in our courts. America's courts have been co-opted by organized crime organizations operating under the color of law to defraud their victims of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We the people must confront the perpetrators of these crimes to have any hope of creating transparency and accountability in our courts and repairing our legal system. We stand with you to create this accountability. It's time to face us. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Face Us Radio, Blog Talk Radio, Hidden Truth Revealed, and this is the Inside Scoop. Today is February 1st, 2023. My name is Robin Austin, and I am with my co-host tonight, Lou Ann Fleming.
Hello, everybody. Hope everyone is okay tonight. And we also have Hillary Hogus joining us tonight as well. Say hello.
I will say hello, and honored to be here with Lou Ann, Robin, Marcy, and, of course, Matt Scarlatos, who is unbelievable. He is doing – I have a saying that I read somewhere that I try and remember each day. Make it seem like everything depends on you, and I try. And that's what Matt does. He makes it seem that every case that he helps on, it all depends on him. And from day's start to day's end, without even speaking to him, I know that he is fighting the fight for someone, not himself, but for someone who unfortunately is going through something horrific with the probate and the criminal courts that he has been through, that we have been through. And we need to do as much as we can. There's always something to do. There's always calls to make because they're not going away. They know we're there or here. They're not going away. Guardianships are being filed. People are fighting for their family members. So we are so happy to have Matt on the show with us, as I am happy to be on the show as well. Thank you.
There you go. Perfectly well said. You have anything you want to say, Robin, before we go on?
No, I'm just excited to be here. It's going to be an interesting show. I hope that everyone has brought your pen and paper, because there's going to be very good information coming out that may be very helpful for you. On with the show.
Ryan, I just want to talk a little bit first that we did have the third annual Guardianship and Conservatorship Abuse Awareness Day today. Lisa McCarley was the host on that, and I think it went very, very well. I mean, they had some remarkable guests on there telling their stories and what needed to be done to the system. And I think it was Carrie Kasem that said that we should be all getting a huge rally together. It's the only way we're going to bring awareness with this. So we're going to talk a little bit more about that later on in the show. But today was the third annual Guardianship and Conservatorship Abuse Awareness Day. So I just want everybody to know, if you joined it, call into the show. Tell us what you thought about that as well. Anyway, we have an amazing guest. I've been talking to him for a few days. And like Hillary said earlier, he is just an amazing guy. And we're going to be telling you a little bit about him first. Let's see. His name is, actually we're joined by him, Matthew Scarlatos. He is from Reston, Virginia. His father, Paul Scarlatos, lived in a $1.2 million home in Vienna, Virginia, and he had plenty of money to live off. And, of course, he was put into a guardianship. He suffered a mass stroke in May 1998, and then for 3.5 years, his father became a ward to the state of Virginia. So there was an article done by Nathan Baca, ABC News 7, on May 10, 2018, called Fairfax County Siblings Fight to See Father and the Guardian Terminated Their Visitation Rights. And we all know exactly how that happens and why that happens. It's not good. Anyway, we want to know, did his dad have his directives in place, and why was Matthew banned in the first place? And then we also know that Matthew has been working very closely with other advocates, and we will have an update on Roger Hillegas and the Stuart Hanta case in Reno, Nevada, which has been an ongoing process for a long time. As we all know, Roger Hillegas and Stuart Hanta were doing just like they would have. They tried to help his mother out that was in abusive guardianship, you know, alleged abusive guardianship. And we are basically here to say we believe this is, he is so innocent in all this. I've been through the system. I've talked to 2,000 to 3,000 families on average. And many of these cases that have come to us has had the same thing. But many families are afraid to try to get their families out of a guardianship, or they don't know how. So we all know how this happens, but we have Matthew come in to join us to talk a little bit about that. And this is going to be a very, really good, exciting show. What do you think, Robin?
Absolutely. I think this is the this is the place where we bring forward some of these issues that people are unaware of. The crimes of this nature are often hidden because the victims are taken away from public view. They're isolated. They're medicated so they themselves can't defend themselves or speak out on their own behalf oftentimes. If they even have access to any kind of way to reach out, such as telephone or the ability to write letters, whatever it is, oftentimes they're drugged into insensibility by people that give them drugs against their will that they have no choice over. And family are told, if you speak out, there will be consequences not only for you but for your loved one that we happen to be holding hostage. And that is absolute criminal behavior that is passing for some kind of, oh, that's a civil thing that we don't get involved in, when you ask for help from the authorities, such as the police, and it's a horrifying reality that what I'm saying here is the absolute truth, and there's no two ways about it, that you can be taken away and locked up, and no one can do anything about it, and those who want to speak of it are then persecuted or even prosecuted. I've heard of people who had $1 million fines that they were required to pay because they did speak out about what was going on with relatives that were in this unethical guardianship system, this racket that passes for something legal. So I'm excited to talk about that today, and let's get into it, shall we?
Yeah, we are going to do that. We're going to go ahead and Hillary, is there anything else you want to talk about before we go on real quick?
I mean, just that we've got to do more. You know, we have to do more than we're doing. There are quite a few advocates that are being sued for libel, slander by attorneys, for fighting the fight. Sometimes it just really, really gets to me. But one thing I can say is, no matter whether the story or the news piece is on the point or not, we're getting more media to cover our plight. Nancy Grace, you know, and Fox, they did a piece. No, there could have been, I mean, yes, there could have been more focused on the judges and the lawyers. But just to have a piece on guardianship victims, not only Britney Spears, was huge. So we're going to keep on keeping on for the young people with mental disabilities, for adults and the elderly who are put into guardianship. Some of them have no family to even fight for them. We don't even know where they are. But for the people that we don't know where they are, or where we do know where they are, we will continue fighting for you and helping your family members to get you out, to get visitation. And we are not afraid of the attorneys who will sue us for libel, slander, or the judges who aren't making the right judgments for our family members and for the elderly and disabled. We're not doing this for monetary gain. We're doing it because it's the right thing to do. So that's where I am today, and I am in it to win it. And winning it is to get justice for everyone who has been put into guardianship wrongfully, who died in guardianship so their soul can rest, and to stop people being put into guardianship. So that's where
exactly.
I am.
That was really well said, you know, and I feel the exact same thing. I'm sure everybody that listens to this radio show feels the exact same thing. And we, like I said, Hillary, we've got a really good guest tonight, and he has stuck up for Roger Hillegas and Stuart Henty,
and I learned
of him. Yeah. When you called me up and says you need to get Matthew on, I'm like, I agree. So I got a hold of him right away. So we're going to go ahead and bring him on right now. Matthew, have you joined us yet? I've got you on there.
Luann, thank you very much for inviting me on your show. It's a pleasure.
Thank you so much. And I know that we've talked a lot the last couple of days, and we're going to also be talking about what's going on in Reno, Nevada. We've got a lot to cover tonight. But one thing, I was kind of shocked a little bit when Hillary says that your father and you went through this whole probate issue, and I thought, oh, my gosh. So he knows exactly what happened, basically the playbook and the guardianship field. You are awake to all of that. Can you kind of give us an update how you got it started on all this and what happened to it? Whatever you can share with us would be great.
Yes, essentially, we were faced with a dilemma in 2015, where both our father and our stepmother were not in good health. Our father was in terminal hospice, so we were told by our stepmother in late 2014, September, October, and she had brought hospice into the house. She said, "Your father is starting to fail considerably from his Alzheimer's," and we had been watching this for many years. My sister and I had seen his decline, but in proportion or in relation to his decline, there were circumstances that were not good on the home front. My stepmother was not properly taking care of him. She didn't have either the capacity to do it or she didn't want to do it. But the circumstances were such that we attempted to intervene in around 2011, seeking co-guardianship when there were critical circumstances related to his hygiene and other things that we were seeing getting progressively worse on our regular visits. And, you know, we attempted to take our stepmother aside and say, hey, you know, you need to bring an in-care home professional into the house and get assistance because, you know, dad's failing because of this. And there was one circumstance in particular, and I'm not going to get into the unpleasant details, but he had a skin infection that was so bad that they had to put him in hospital for almost 2 weeks on heavy duty antibiotics to clean up the infection. And that is what solicited the co-guardianship, or that essentially was the reason why co-guardianship was attempted the first time 4 years earlier, because she was incapable of taking care of his needs. And we had to essentially force things to the extent that to make it a legal matter that she needed to bring in a licensed care professional to look after him. Well, in 2015, it reached critical mass. She went to hospital for 4 months, was in critical care. We were coming for our regular visits for breakfast, and we find out from a phone call right before Sunday, which is when we normally got together, that our stepmother was in critical care. The in-laws in another state were looking after things, and we were asked not to visit with our father. So that obviously was a red flag right there, because that, on top of the fact that he's in terminal hospice, we're concerned. So we took the burden of obviously immediately getting involved, and we were shadowing the licensed care professionals for the better part of a week. My father was bedridden for about 2.5 to 3 months already, and was not eating that much at the time, and he was going through a lot of changes, and but we didn't know to the extent of what those changes were. He was a 17 year stroke survivor at that point. He had a massive left hemisphere stroke while vacationing with his second wife in the Turks and Caicos Islands in 1998. And when they medevaced him to Miami, they couldn't administer the proper medications that they had to they in a critical emergency like that. And when they brought him to the Miami Heart Institute, there was a lot of damage. There was a significant amount of right side paralysis, and his cognitive skills. Speech in particular, his cognitive skills were excellent. Speech was affected by this. And, like a lot of circumstances with family, there's tension brought on by a lot of different factors. We had a significant amount of turmoil in our relationship with our second mother that was regrettable. But a lot of this, was born out of who was gonna get him therapy after this event occurred in 1998. He was a retired Navy captain, so Bethesda Naval Hospital had all of the attributes that you could want for physical therapy, speech therapy, whatever, and. It gets into a lengthy discussion, but we were kind of at loggerheads at who was going to look after our father from after his stroke occurred on, and we were family. We were the product of a very, very strong union with our first mother, and we didn't let go. Essentially, we were always on the present when things happened in the hospital over the years. We were there, and there were just some circumstances that again reached critical mass in 2015. She was in the hospital. We were alerted to this emergency, and our father was near death, so we were told. And, we wanted to make sure that everything was copacetic, and what we were being told was indeed accurate. And we took it upon ourselves, the initiative to stay in the house for a week to kind of supervise the care, his care, and, to determine what was going on. Well, we had a watershed moment with the hospice nurse. 1 week into this, where she was giving us details about his care and the fact that he had a disorder called dysphagia, which we knew nothing about, and I was surprised by that. My sister was surprised by that, and we asked a lot of questions. And she said, "Well, your father needs extensive preparation of his meals." Nectar thick liquids, pureed foods, and this set off a lot of alarms, because all we had been seeing all week were whole vegetables, meats, that were cut up in reasonably small portions, but if you have this disorder, this swallowing disorder, you can aspirate into your lungs.
Right.
And that set off a lot of alarm bells for us, a lot of issues. And I alerted the hospice nurse that I've been witnessing Whole Foods being fed all week, that, you know, we've been having breakfasts on a regular basis with our father and dinners, and he's been eating Whole Foods. Nobody told us about this dysphagia. And, you know, she's just alerting us. And as I'm talking to her, there's a jar of straws sitting in the middle of the kitchen table. And she said, under no circumstances is he to use straws. And I've been witnessing the nurses or the caretakers giving him not nectar-thick liquids, but regular ice water with straws. He said, under no circumstances do you want straws used. Gummy bears, chocolate bars. And the care assistant is sitting there at the kitchen table with us listening to this the whole time that she's there. And she, at the end of this conversation, after we get this knowledge, she puts a candy bar in our father's mouth. So we basically said, okay, it's time to get involved. We need to go after co-guardianship again. And we got what we thought was the best counsel in all of Virginia. Northern Virginia is a pretty well-to-do, affluent area as far as the state of Virginia is concerned. And this law firm, Hale Ball, had a very good reputation. And they were revealing things to us through their subpoenas about my father and the circumstances of power of attorney, who actually had it, whether those kinds of things were being revealed to us that we were not aware of, that we were very surprised. And they just said, right now, you know, you just sit tight, stay with your father, do the things you need to do to look after him. And, you know, we'll take it from there. We'll continue to do our research on this. But our father was bedridden for almost 2.5 to 3 months. Within 4 weeks, I had him walking again. I had him communicate. He was eating regularly and, again, properly, because he needed the proper diet with the pureed foods that he wasn't getting before. And, you know, we saw a complete turnaround. This man that was supposed to be near death came back to life. And
wow.
Proper nutrition, he was getting exercise, life was very good. I mean, it was a gift to see him walking, being with us and doing the things and communicating and doing the things that he wasn't doing with a substantially reduced capacity because of his stroke. But the one thing I admired the most about my father was his desire, his tenacity and his determination to get through a bad situation. He did it as a naval officer, and that carried over. Those disciplines really did carry over. And I think he survived as long as he did as a stroke patient because of that. So 4 months into this, we're basically told that our stepmother is recovering, and that because we did not have durable power of attorney, we were not part of a trust, we were not part of his estate, which he didn't have, either for his spouse or for his children, that it was going to be a really nettlesome situation trying to achieve co-guardianship. She was recovering. And they just said, the fact that your father didn't have a living will or an irrevocable trust really is going to be a problem. And they just said, Virginia law in particular is very problematic. It's old. It's archaic. There are a lot of influences that haven't changed. And the fact that, you know, regardless of whether your father put you, with the proper provisions, to protect them, that ship has sailed. It's not there. So you have to be thinking about what you're going to get out of this and the potential of losing in court with the substantial amount of money that you've already paid. So to us, so we're listening to all of this. And they said, we're going to recommend that you leave the house when your stepmother returns after her convalescence, because it's probably not a good idea, you know, if there's tension there. But I'm and I'm pushing back with our attorneys, because I'm saying, hey, wait a minute. This gentleman was, we were told, was near death. You know, we literally got him back to life again. He's thriving. And now you're asking me to leave while he's doing these things. And they just said, just for the time being, we're going to be going to trial probably within another couple weeks. Actually, it was more like a week and a half. So it just would be a good thing, 2 weeks actually. It would be a good thing if you vacated the house for now. You can make your phone calls or whatever and communicate that way, but you're not to stay in the home. So that caused a lot of trepidation right there. I and my sister, we vacated, and my stepmother came back home, and within 1 week of her return, our father has this event. And they rush him to the emergency. He has this aspirating pneumonia event, and he's on heavy-duty antibiotics for almost 2 weeks to clear his chest out. There was a witness involved. We were not able to get her to cooperate properly as to what took place, what happened. But they rushed him off to hospital. He's in the hospital for 2 weeks. Recovering from that, and essentially our attorneys say your father is not going to be going home, obviously, and you have no idea how irate we were, because she was the one that told us, Kimberly Murphy was the one that told us, you need to vacate the house, it's just a formality, everything is going to be fine, you know, yada yada, and that was not the case. A week into it, our father has this episode that's pretty substantial, given the fact that he's a 17-year stroke survivor. So he's in hospital recovering, and then where are we going to put him while we go to trial with this thing for co-guardianship? And it's determined that they put him in a not one of the better rehabilitative centers in Merrifield, Virginia, by the name of Islis. And he's going to do his recovery there. Meanwhile, we're getting ready. We're getting prepared after 4 months of preparation for co-guardianship. We get a call less than 48 hours before we're ready to go to court, and our attorney, Kimberly Murphy, tells us it's not a good idea. We think based on what we've already disclosed to you about the fact that you're not part of his POA, you're not part of a living trust, or irrevocable trust, that the best approach to this is getting a third-party arbiter in the form of a probate guardian, who's a licensed attorney also. So our heads are spinning. You know, we had been
– I bet.
We had all of this Deuces Tecum information that was a slam dunk, and I'm not going to get into those details, but it was substantial. And you know, we were being told one thing. But then when our stepmother recovered sufficiently or satisfactorily, the whole latitude changed. Now you're going to lose if you potentially lose big time if you go to court. You're not going to get co-guardianship. And, oh, by the way, under Commonwealth Virginia law, you're going to have to pay for the proceeds if you lose of your attorney's fees. And this is a very expensive high-end law firm, as well as your stepmother's. So we had less than 36 hours, 40 hours to digest that one, and it was bad. I mean, our heads were spinning. We had a day or so to think about all of this, and we're told we had to make a decision, and we didn't know anything about probate guardianship. We didn't know what was involved. We didn't know the
right
problems
no.
the issues related to what happens to people that go through probate guardianship and the crimes that were being committed, way probably way before then. So we took the bait. They essentially prepared a settlement agreement between the plaintiff and the defense, and all parties agreed to it with one provision that a $64,000 custodial arrangement was going to be injected into that, which was essentially the proceeds of the attorney's fees that we paid for our father that were going to be set aside for him, for his care, for his physical therapy, for whatever he needed when he was in his care facility. And within a month, the guardian that took the role by the name of Valerie Geiger requested the fees be taken from her ward, our father, in the lump sum of $64,000 to go to her. And yes, in violation of every codicil within the settlement agreement, the judge turned around in 1 month and gave it all to her.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. Wasn't that money supposed to go for his care, though?
Yes. Yes, it was.
So how?
And,
so tell me.
Essentially.
Go back a little
Matthew. Essentially. Pardon me?
So back up a little bit. So this money was supposed to be his. So how did the judge justify giving it to her? I don't get that part.
She made the argument that his estate covered all of those costs. The spouse was obligated to pay for those things. So therefore, there was no need for that $64,000 to go to the ward, even though the settlement agreement specified it as such in very direct language, distinct language, it was going to go to her now. And her argument was the wife is responsible for setting aside the money for his care. So this doesn't make any sense. It should go to me to pay for my attorney's fees. And the judge approved it.
Oh, my gosh. You know, and that's what we talk a lot about on this radio show, is that I just don't think it's about the best interest of the ward. Everybody says, you know, it's always the best interest of the ward. Everything should be given to the ward. But in many cases, this is just not happening. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. I mean, we were shocked because we had that settlement agreement in front of us, and we were saying, you know, how can the judge basically authorize that and then a month later turn around and give it to the attorney?
Yeah,
so,
there's something there that I had kind of puzzled about that whole situation. I mean, you know, I'm sitting here thinking about why would it happen? And then I also found out that they were trying to ban you from ever seeing your father as well at one time.
That's correct. That came after. And actually, that's a good segue to what happens next. During the week of that GAL being submitted, the guardian being appointed and going to court with a settlement agreement, we started noticing changes to our father. He started appearing when we were visiting with bruises on his arms and his lower extremities, and we thought it was due to potentially the medications he was on. There were no IVs. So I started asking the physical therapist, where are these bruises coming from? And I said I knew he was on probably some blood thinners when he was in the hospital, but I said, he's not taking that anymore. I said, so what is this? And I said, well, you know, what medications is he on? She gave me a full, list of the prescribed medications they were giving him. And I said, but none of these, you know, would cause bleeding of any kind, at least not to my knowledge. So what is this? They didn't know. About a week after we had our settlement agreement and the guardian was appointed, my brother is taken aside by a woman who is the wife of one of the residents that I live. And she introduces herself, and she said, my brother Mike, she said, Mr. Scarlatta, she said, I need to talk to you. She said, something happened last night that she said you need to know about. And she said, it happens with a lot of regularity in this place. She said, I need to know you, to let you know that, because she said, that's why I'll never leave my husband alone, because of what goes on in here. And essentially, my father had a changing very early in the morning, and there was a very, very loud scream in his room that startled this woman. She came to his door to see what was going on, and this nurse is just taking him out. I mean, very, very abusive. And these bruises on the arm were you know, from a lot of those. And we obviously got involved. I refused to leave. I basically protested the whole way. I stayed in there for as long as I could. The police were summoned twice on me to relieve me. They said, you know, these aren't normal business hours. I let the officer, the Fairfax County police officer, know what was going on. He understood, but he just said, sir, he said, unfortunately, this is private property. And I said, but officer, I said, there's no restraining order. I said, I'm just trying to protect my father. And he said, unfortunately, he said, you've got to leave, you know, outside normal business hours. I said, there are no normal outside business hours posted. I said, I see family members in here all the time. So we went back and forth on this for about a week. And by July, it got progressively worse, to the point where I got a family friend who was a board-certified physician involved to do a full physical examination of my dad. She came in the middle of the night, opened up her bag, did a whole workup on him, took pictures, brought it back to her fellow physicians at the hospital in Northern Virginia where she worked, and they all rendered the same opinion. They said, yeah, this is physical abuse. You know, there are pictures that I have of literally fingerprints in my dad's arms.
Oh my gosh.
Where the person, the nurse, squeezed so unbelievably hard that she left an indelible imprint of her fingers, or his fingers, I don't know. And, you know, we tried to investigate this with the hospital administrator, the nursing home administrator. They basically circled the wagons. They got the guardian to sign a letter. Under no circumstances is Matthew Scarlatta, and if he violates this letter, he can be arrested.
Oh, my gosh.
Again, no restraining.
You know,
order,
and to tell you the truth, Matthew, hold on a second, Matthew. To tell you the truth, you know, when anybody in their right mind would see something, bruises on their parents' arms, their children's arms, or whatever, you're not going to sit there and be quiet about it. Nobody in their right mind is going to be quiet about it. I'd be fuming. I'd say, what's going on? What's going on? We would all be asking questions. You know, I just think what they did was so...
No, and this Valerie Geiger I can't understand it, because we're the ones that brought the guardianship in. We indirectly, by proxy, hired her. Because we didn't know what we were doing. And we trusted the system. We believed the judge. We believed the police. We believed the system was going to protect our dad under these circumstances. No ifs, ands, or buts. I just did. And I did the peaceful protest route. You know, I crossed my legs. I wouldn't leave. And the third time I came unannounced, the police arrived. And they're two strapping guys, and they came in my room, very respectful, and I'm reading a book with my dad, to my dad, and he said, sir, he goes, I need to speak to you. And he said, outside the room, please. Put the book on my dad's bed. I go outside. I speak to this police officer, and he said, sir, unfortunately, I'm going to have to tell you that you know, did you receive a letter from the guardian that you are not to come to this facility? And I explained the situation in great detail. I said, did you see my father's arms? And he looked down, and he looked, he was sheepish. And he said, and he just said, sir, he goes, unfortunately, the guardian in this particular case holds the rules. And I said, hey, wait a minute. I said, there's abuse going on here. I said, this guardian knows there's abuse going on, and she's banned me because I got a board-certified physician to do a medical evaluation of my dad. They corroborated with other medical professionals that there was abuse going on in here and reported it to Adult Protective Services. So as an act of reprisal, this guardian is trying to expel me when my father is being isolated during a crime, during his abuse. And I said, by the way, he's a 17-year stroke survivor. And the guy almost looked like he was going to cry. He just said, sir, he goes, I can't believe I've got to do this. And he looked at me and he just said, but I'm going to have to arrest you. And I said, you got to be kidding me. And he said, unfortunately, he said, no, I'm not. He said, a letter was presented. He said, you violated that letter. And he said, we're going to have to take you in.
Oh, my God.
And it was so funny. Because when I walked out the door, I said, okay, I'll get my car. and he said, no, sir, unfortunately, he goes, you're going to have to be handcuffed and put in the back of the car. They brought me before a magistrate and arrested me. And you know what? He just said to me in confidence, he goes, I can't even imagine what you're going through. And he said, I'm just going to say this on a personal level. He said, because he said, I hate this. But he said, don't do this again.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Lord, you know.
So,
you know, the thing that's hardest about this story, besides the fact that it's not unique and that I've heard it before many times, is
many
that
times.
The
I know you have.
Is that these people are in a position where they know that they can do harm and no one will stop them.
Mm-hmm.
This is a sadist in a position where they are intentionally doing harm, harming someone, bruising them, hurting them, and they know, I'm going to get away with this.
Yeah,
the authorities will protect me while I abuse this person.
Well, you know, and today I wanted to run you by something. They were talking today on that summit today, that seminar, that they were talking about how these are criminal activities happening in a civil court. So that's one thing that the police and them are not looking at this. They're looking at, since you're in a probate court, it's all civil matter. He says that it is not. It is criminal what is going on to some of these cases.
Absolutely,
and that is
where the law is breaking down, because that's what a police officer will tell you when you say, look at these bruises, look at this person, they're being abused. They say, well, I'm sorry, but this is in a civil court, it's a civil matter. I'm not in a position to do anything about that.
Right.
It's not criminal. Yes, it is criminal.
Right.
And that's
the breakdown.
And that's where our system is breaking down, because police either are not educated or are simply not, for whatever reason, there's corruption in the force, whatever it may be, but they're not responding to crimes that are criminal activity.
Mm-hmm.
They're pretending, for whatever reason, that it's not something that they should be involved in, because there's this other court that's involved, that's a civil court. But that is,
that's horseshit. Yeah.
That's not true.
Yeah.
That is absolutely wrong. And we have got to change this, and I'm not sure what it's going to take, but they're on the wrong side of it, and they know they're on the wrong side of it. This sheepish officer apologizing to you while he says, I'm very sorry, but I got to take you in, mm-hmm. knows he's doing wrong,
right.
knows he's on the wrong side.
But they're commanded to do certain things.
And it has to change at the level of the people who run the police and the people who run the courts. We have got to organize in such a way that those people have crowds of people outside their door with protest signs, you know. Mm-hmm. We need to call them up and say, what color do you like your protest sign? Because we're about to get 150 people out there,
right.
or 30 people, you know, but whatever, this has got to change. We cannot permit this to go on.
Right, and also in that seminar, there, you know, like Kerry Kasem was talking about, that everybody has to start coming together and basically, and because everybody's done so much to bring awareness, but nothing's being done. She says you have to get on to like the Free Brittany movement, and you have to raise a lot of concern in the public with the news media before anything changes. What do you think about that? Anybody?
Absolutely.
I mean, if you want to call in the show, call me if you want to talk about that. I mean, I agree. I think we have to go in mass forces to get anything done anymore. What do you think, Robin?
If you're asking me, I think that the way that change happens is that individuals in the positions of power have to realize that the power that they're wielding isn't their own,
mm-hmm.
that it is our power. We, the people, hold the power. But if we simply lay down and say, oh, well, they don't seem to be doing a very good job, then we're giving up
mm-hmm.
our power. We're ceding power, C-E-D-E. We're ceding our mm-hmm. power to people who do wrong with it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's our power, so that's our responsibility. We are actually ultimately responsible if we permit it as the body politic, as the entirety of the people who
mm-hmm.
live in our society. If we don't rise up and make these people so uncomfortable in their abuses of power that they realize, I don't think I can get away with
mm-hmm,
this
mm-hmm.
any longer.
Yeah.
You know, this. If we don't let them realize, I mean, in the old days, in Revolutionary War America, if this kind of thing went on, then you know, the Boston Tea Party is an example of what happened. An organized mob gets together to oppose the unjustness of the system.
Right.
And that, I'm not advocating for that, but they need to feel that type of pressure where there's enough organized resistance that, you know, that the people responsible for permitting and allowing this behavior, when they know they're wrong,
uh-huh.
they know it's wrong, the people responsible at the top need to feel the pressure from a large enough group of people
yeah.
that they go, I'm not so sure I'm going to be able to feel safe going home. I'm not so sure I'm going
to
be able to feel safe
going
awareness. Out to dinner because
uh-huh.
there's too many people too angry about this thing that I'm doing, which they should be angry about, which I know is wrong, but I'm letting them get away with this because I can and because there's money being made. I'm getting money at the back
that's
end
what,
or I'm getting paid,
that's,
you know.
Yeah, that's what's wrong with our courts today. But, Matthew, what do you think about, it's criminal. A lot of this is criminal activity in a civil court. We have to move it out somehow. Any ideas? Anybody call me here at the radio station. I'm going to give you a phone number to call into today, and it's the same number we use every week. And we'll be taking phone calls here in about 10 minutes. The number you do that is 845-241-9962. You press A1. 845-241-9962. You press A1. And you will be live on this with Faceless Radio. So go ahead, call into the radio show. So tell me, Matthew, what do you think about all this? And we're also going to start talking here in about...
No, I concur with Robin. I'm by heart a pacifist. I mean, you do everything in your power to get your message across first everything. Every conceivable part of your being has to do it with the pen, for lack of a better analogy. And I really do believe the pen is mightier than the sword. We have to approach our legislators, our state officials, our local and state officials, and meet them at their own game, preferably during legislative sessions, to tell them, make them aware of what's going on in their towns, throughout their state, probate, guardianship, family court, abuses of police, which is rampant. We know that, especially after this godforsaken event took place in Tennessee. And we have to be introspective, but we have to put them on notice that they have an obligation, they have a responsibility as our elected officials that we pay for. That you know, they're gonna bake in legislation that's gonna be mindful of all of this. My sister and I were really proponents of working through the House of Delegates in Richmond for at least 2 years prior to my father's death. We pressed the flesh with a number of officials, Ralph Northam. You know, we talked to him during his campaigns. We did a lot of things to basically grease the skids, to tell them how bad the situation of ours was, and that it wasn't going on just with our family. We knew of other family victims that this was happening to, and that they needed to be keenly aware to write in legislation that was going to offer group protections and a Bill of Rights for the Lord that to this day are non-existent.
Right. Oh, my gosh. You know, when I even think about legislation sometimes, that is really hard to get anything done in legislation as well. We've been up against legislation for 10 years, and it's snail pace. It's just not easy to do that
well,
as well.
It's snail pace. It's snail pace, Luann, because there's not a big enough groundswell. I mean, you talk to Hillary and how hard she works, and she might as well be cloned. She's 10 people. With her actions, because it's so important.
Did you hear that, Hillary?
Because it's personal.
I did loud and clear, and sometimes, I mean, like tonight, I am absolutely, for no particular reason, exhausted. But
yes,
seeing how lucky my father was hitting the lottery in Florida, and miraculously with no method or anything getting out of guardianship, I always say I could have gone back to a normal semblance of life, but this is my mission in life, to stop the madness. So I get up every day with a purpose that I've never had in my life. I don't look for a mission. I've never looked for a battle, right? I've got enough raising two young kids and my 93-year-old dad, but this is one that was brought to me, and I am, again, honored to fight for people who don't have anyone to fight for them, and I do it gladly every day.
Wow.
Hillary, is your dad
93?
He'll be 93 on March 12th.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. That is amazing.
And he's doing good. He's grateful. And he always asked me, well, who did you speak to today? And are you going to help him get out of it? And I'm like, I don't know, Dad. I'm not sure. But he was one of the lucky ones. And for me, it's easy to fight the fight. For some reason, I'm my mother's daughter, and she was a fighter. And it's a good cause. It's the right cause. You know, so we have to do it. We don't have a choice.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, and like you say, that you're a fighter. My dad was the fighter in my family, and I definitely am the fighter in my family. And I see this every day. the stories that have come to me. I got one the other day about a lady out in Nebraska. I'm not going to say her name right now because she's really scared for her husband. They took her husband, and she hasn't seen her husband for 3 months, and she doesn't know what to do. So she finally got a hold of me through Elliot Bernstein, and I have been talking to her every day, and she is frightened on what to do. Nobody has the right to be taken away, your spouse of all these years. No one has the right to come in and take your mom, your dad, basically put out, you know, a kind of a ransom money in a way. You know, we're going to take your husband, we're going to take their money, we're going to take this, we're going to take that. What is going on in America? You know, by the way, I want to tell everybody that Marcy has a night off. I wanted to mention that earlier at the beginning of the show, but I got sidetracked. Anyway, Marcy has a night off. We're going to appreciate that. Anyway, I also want to talk to you a little bit, Matthew, when you get done telling your story. We want to also touch on that. You've been working closely with a lot of advocates, and you're going to give us an update on the Roger Hillegas and Stuart Henty case in Reno, Nevada.
Very, so, very significant. Yeah, very important case. And
very,
I know there are probably a lot of ears right now on the show that know of the circumstances of this case profoundly, really well. I met Roger Hillegas 3 months before his world changed forever in 2019. At a World Elder Abuse Conference in Washington, D.C. And there were a number of us, other individuals that I knew, and they were talking to this gentleman and outside one of the conference halls during a break, and that's where I met Roger. And he was telling me the circumstances of his mother's case. Had lost his father four years earlier, and his mother was in this really fiendish probate guardianship situation. But unlike my father's situation, where we invited probate guardianship in reluctantly, but we did, he had all of the elements for protection that his parents could never have been denied. They had the power of attorney. He was the executor of his parents' trust, and he was put in charge. And all of these bits got stripped from him. And again, unfortunately, familial circumstances with his sister, and his mother was in a substandard nursing care facility. And you know, we know the drill. I took a shine to Roger the first time I met him. He was very articulate, very well versed in legal matters, in the law. He had told me about the appeals that he had brought before the Nevada Supreme Court, and I was taken by him. And I thought, okay, you know what? If anybody is gonna turn this thing around, it's this guy. He's doing all the right things, and he had much more knowledge than I could have ever had. And you know, we parted company, and you know, exchanged our addresses and so forth. But lo and behold, 4 months later, you know, this announcement that he had been apprehended as a fugitive from justice in Southern California, while visiting his uncle with his mother. And I knew immediately when I was reading this, and I didn't have the details when it first crossed my screen, but I just knew the guy based on the, you know, the handful of conversations I had with him, and I knew exactly what he was doing, and it's what I wanted to do for my father when he was being physically abused. And he did the right thing. He did the honorable thing. He tried to take his mother out of an abusive, neglectful system. It treated her as chattel, treated her as property, and he rescued her. And so did Mr. Hansi, the 30-year career police officer that got involved in this, unbeknownst to him, where it was going to go. And both these gentlemen need to be honored for what they did, because this is what America is about. It's what family is about. It's what our protections are about. They did absolutely the right thing. No question. And he saved his mother. Both those gentlemen, Stuart Hansi and Roger Hillegas, saved Susan Hillegas. It took the state of Nevada to forcefully bring her, a woman with a heart condition, no less. And I don't know if the listeners tonight know about the circumstances of his apprehension and arrest, but they separated him from his mother with a SWAT unit. And they were ready to use lethal force. They that's what they do. And thank God nothing happened to Roger. And it's a miracle that nothing happened to the mother, because what happened inside that place, that residence, his uncle's home, is anybody's guess. But that had to be a horrific experience for Susan Hillegas. And then she never saw her son again.
You know,
and I can't think of anything worse.
I came across a couple times when I was going to go rescue my mother as well. I mean, we had it planned out. We're going to rescue her, you know, and this is before she even got into guardianship. I was just trying to get her away from my brother, and we were going to go and take my mother back. We had it all. I know exactly how Stuart feels and you feel, and Roger Hillegas, and everybody on this radio show knows.
No, I'm not at all in either of those gentlemen's shoes. I have to tell you, I only thought about those things, and I wanted to do it, but I never did it. Roger did it.
Yeah.
Roger did the most.
Right.
Roger did the most noble, selfless thing for his mother, and that's what we have to get back to in this country. You protect your own with everything you have. Nobody gets to them. Nobody takes their life. Nobody treats them consciously as property. And once they're declared a ward of the state, they're human beings. And they're imbued with all of the attributes and the protections and the safety that our Constitution affords them. And to have this level of contradiction that we have now is blasphemy.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate to use it in a religious context, but I think it's appropriate.
Yeah, and you know, we saw that video the other day of Stuart Hansi in court with Roger Hillegas. Roger Hillegas is sitting in a wheelchair. I mean,
yes.
I was so shocked over that the system could have done all this to him for rescuing his mother. They have him literally
and I hate to say this, the biggest convict in the world. We don't know what goes on in those places. And I know, after talking to Stuart, those are not good places to be in. And again, I don't know the Washoe County Sheriff's Department prison facility, you know, very well. But I've talked to these two on many occasions when they were inside there. Roger now definitely he is experiencing the same circumstances that his co-defendant Stuart did last year, and they have committed no crime. They have committed no crime.
Let me ask
a
question.
They are waiting for trial going on 4 years.
Yeah, hold on,
wow.
Hold on, Matthew. Let Hillary come in here. Go ahead.
So let me ask you a question. What is the big turn-on for the state of Nevada and Mr. Amos, or what's his last name, Amos?
Yes. Amos Stege.
Right. What is Mr. Stege's, I mean, why does he have it out for them? I just don't get it. He is adamant that he is bringing him down. I don't know if it's a career move for him, that he wants to be the head honcho, but no one is mentioning the underlying issue, the main issue, that Roger was doing his mother.
Exactly.
There are many layers to this. I know, Hillary, that you've probably caught some of the interviews that Luann has done when she had Stewart on the show.
Yes.
It was a kill two birds with one stone situation. Here's my take at it. I believe there was a personal vendetta against Stewart because of his running up against the system that when he wore the badge and he was in that uniform where he did the honorable thing in terms of when he saw malfeasance, when he saw corruption, he reported it. He was with the Highway
right.
Patrol, I think, the longest out of his career in service, and I believe as a peace officer. And I know that he had many run-ins with the head of then the Nevada Highway Patrol, a gentleman by the name of Kirkland. He's mentioned him many times. And this is kind of the behavior out there. There's a lot of interesting activity, shall we say, in that state. You got gambling down south, and Reno is probably an extension of that. But there was a lot of ill will in certain places high at the top for Stewart and his activism in getting justice for fellow police officers. Regarding pensions, a variety of things, and he was an honorable officer, and when you have a corrupt police system,
right.
that's going to be a big problem for you.
Right.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
The other side of that coin is you have Roger, and I have to say this because I do believe it was a watershed. It's not a coincidence that the documentary that took place in Clark County was a year earlier. That's Rick Black's and Billy Mintz's The Guardians.
The Guardian, right.
And that was a very, very important introduction, a probe to how bad this system of justice is with the elderly and the victims. And it exposed a great deal, a lot. And we know how
right.
hard Rick worked to expose that and open the doors and the windows and let in the fresh air. I believe Roger, unfortunately, was an inconvenient at the wrong place at the wrong time with the circumstances of his mother. They needed a scapegoat. They needed a reason to basically say, "Hey, see, there are bad people that are involved in kidnapping their own mother and rescuing them, and they can't do that." When the state decides that you're a ward, you obey. You obey. And I think the timing was an issue. I think that when that documentary reared its important face to the American people, to the public, there were a lot of disgruntled people, especially attorneys, that have been making a lot of money in the probate courts, and they didn't like it.
Yeah.
They didn't like that story.
I think
so,
I happen to agree with her. What else would it be? It's so sad to watch all this going on. And we've been reporting on this with our show and become involved in just just keeping an eye on Roger and what happened to Stuart is just unbelievable. You know, and it's so sad to watch, but we're here to help whatever way we can, you know.
Right. And if I could just say one thing, just maybe it's off the path, but what is Roger's bail right now?
We don't know. We don't know. We know that they set bail at $1 million in Clay County, Missouri.
Wow.
And then they dropped it $900,000 to $100,000 before it went from Judge Engel's court to Judge Krauser's court. In the same,
I mean, they're $1 million. That just puzzles me.
No. But Judge Breslow in the Second Judicial District Court never referenced that. He never spoke about the bench warrant for his arrest. Never spoke to the bail amount being set. And look, we know Roger didn't appear for his hearing. And I'm going to tell you, just from a logical perspective, he saw what happened to his co-defendant, and he was saying to himself, "Do I want to go into some kind of a mental ward?" And have the potential of being locked up and wind up like my mother.
Yeah, exactly.
And I got to tell you something. That thought was running through my head because I couldn't believe they took Stewart's situation to such an unbelievable extreme.
Oh my God, I know.
By the way, I'm
shocked.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
Yes. Stewart didn't find out from court services about his bench warrant for his arrest within 1 hour of missing his hearing. He gets a call from somebody in the media, local media, that, "Hey, Stu, this is so-and-so and such. Do you know you have a bench warrant for your arrest because you missed your hearing and you have a $100,000 bond on you?" He didn't find out from court services. He found out from somebody in the independent media, not independent media, the mainstream media. But that was an eye-opener. That was an eye-opener. I couldn't believe that. And again, you don't go to jail for 90 days. You don't get out of jail after 90 days and have a GPS tracking device placed on you for never committing a crime. Neither of these gentlemen ever had a criminal record. They worked for the state government their whole lives. Yeah, they paid their taxes.
Especially Stewart, you know, he's a 30-year veteran. It's like my father-in-law was a chief of police out here in Aurora, Colorado. I couldn't imagine him. He was in there for 30 years as well. I couldn't imagine them all of a sudden, you know, shackling him and telling him that, you know, you've done this and you've done that wrong and putting monitors on his legs and stuff. That'd be disgusting. You know, I couldn't even believe it if that was to happen. And they're doing the same thing to this man. Makes me sad.
No, but you know,
the way that they handled the entire situation,
yeah,
the way that they have handled the entire situation reeks of corruption. It is not just that they're that they overreacted. You have to look at the entirety of the situation. Here you have two law-abiding citizens who have never had a crime, never had a record, anything like that.
They don't even look at
And what do? They spring a sweet little old lady who is under an abusive guardianship. Allegedly under an abusive guardianship, they're concerned for her well-being. They're not sure she's going to live much longer, so they do what they must. But as a human being, as a moral human being, as any human being would, who has any kind of integrity or moral would do, you do your best to try to rescue those you love from a situation where you believe they are being abused.
Mm-hmm.
And all
and that's
of a sudden,
why, Robin, yeah, that's why we have to fight so hard for the both of them, because you know what? I can never put myself in their shoes, but what would have happened? What would have happened had Susan Hillegas stayed alive and she was deposed at a sworn deposition? She made statements for the record. We know this thing would have been thrown out immediately.
Yeah.
Right.
We know
right.
it would have been thrown
right.
out immediately.
This so-called kidnapping.
Well,
that's why when we look at the entirety of the situation, it is an obvious, it reeks of corruption. And that's why we have to stand up and say, no. We human beings and Americans, you know, in America, we're fortunate enough human beings that we do have the right to organize a protest and to gather together and speak our minds. And so there are certain things that we can do in this country that aren't, you can't get away with in other countries, but we really, really must get our stuff together and make these things happen where we let the authorities know you are outside your authority. This is not permissible in this country. We will not allow it. And I don't know what it's going to take to get people to act in this country, but
ahead,
I certainly hope and pray that we are able to do it.
Let's bring this next guy in. We already know who he is. I think Stuart is joining us, actually. Let's see if we can pull him in. Stuart, are you with us? I think you're online now.
Good evening, Robin. Good evening, Robin, Luann. First and foremost, Matt Skarlatus is a godsend. Captain Paul Skarlatus and his wife created a great gentleman and a great fighter when Mr. Mm-hmm. Matt Skarlatus was brought into this world. To hear the story that Matt told me about his dad was reprehensible. And so I've been listening to the show from the beginning tonight. God bless you both for allowing us to be on the show again. It's reprehensible conduct. Right now, I'm worried not about myself, but about Roger. And I've been launching everything I can to put these people on notice. And I'm talking about the high-level people. I've hit them with everything I can so far. There's more to be done. And since these minions, these idiots, these worthless excuses of people with authority and power and badges and all sorts of little doodads on their collars are listening in tonight, listen to this. We're coming, and we're not stopping. And you're going to go down. Trust me. Judge Breslow, you're on the radar. Judge Sullivan, you're on the radar. Judge Freeman, you're on the radar. Judge Sullivan, you're on the radar. Then we get to the district attorney's office with Mr. Stegney and Mr. Hicks, who have committed crimes, felony crimes. And then we have the cops who have blatantly lied to police reports. Their career should be over with. But the corruption, as Matt alluded to earlier in this broadcast, is so deep and steep in this town. You think, when you think of corruption, you think the gangster movies out of Vegas, Goodfellas and Casino. Uh-uh. Mm. That's the Broadway light show down there. In Reno, mm-hmm. it's really bad. And I only allude to the fact that there was a former district attorney, I'm not going to bring his name into us, who was running high-priced call girls out of the fifth floor of the Mates Hotel back in the day when he was the district attorney of Washoe County, before Joe Conforti came into the picture. So that kind of sets the stage. Why I say that, Luanna, Robin, and Matt? Because they're all connected. He was the godfather of corruption in Washoe County, Reno, Nevada. And they've all spurned off of him, including many district attorneys, including the current one, including the former one, including the federal judge, including the federal judge turned governor, turned now president of the university. They're all tied in. And it's mind-boggling because, as Matt said earlier, I stood up to crime. My mom and dad said, when you go to be a cop, and my dad especially, you put this badge on his chest, son, to serve and protect, not to self-serve and take advantage. They were going to kill me. They were going to kill Roger. And Susan Hillegas is dead. How about the trifecta cover-up? If Susan Hillegas, like Matt said, if Susan Hillegas had got to a deposition, which amazingly the cops never even interviewed her, she was talking to her. so you can call me a liar? Go ahead. You people are the ones alive, not me. And there I was facing, you know, the being put tagged like a wild animal, which is on my ankle right now, which I went and had to pay $400 of extortion money yesterday. Or guess what? They were going to turn it off. They were going to take the monitor back. My pretrial service officer said, well, Stu, if that happens, I'm going to have to report you as noncompliant. That's like serving up fresh meat to the tiger in the cage. Basically, I would have gone back to jail and joined Rocky. So I did my little part. I showed up at the Department of Alternative Sentencing with 400 $1 bills. And I said, here, count it out, and I want a receipt. And it took them about 20 minutes to count it out. And then I said,
written a check and put extortion in it under the memo.
yeah, Matt, I think you're right. But, boy, it was really
fun to
watch. It's like
$4,000 I had to pay to visit my father as punishment.
Yeah, which is another extortion.
For trying to stop his abuse.
And, Matt, I don't know how you did it, but I'm telling you right now, the fight is heating up. Matt has been so helpful to both Roger and myself.
Yeah.
I want to know. I know from personal experience, guys, and Matt knows this too. I was in a wheelchair begging for medical help. They refused me. There was a guy inside the infirmary where I was locked down for 23 out of 24 hours a day because, gosh, they didn't know where to put me because I was a retired cop. They were afraid for me. I go, put me out. I don't give a shit. Put me out there. And they wouldn't do it. Here's a guy walking around with an obvious broken arm. I go, dude, your arm's broken. I mean, my mom was a nurse, so I kind of know a little bit about medical stuff. And he goes, yeah, I know. I fell out of my bunk last night after I suffered a seizure. I go, why aren't you in the hospital? He goes, well, they won't take me there. I go, if you move that thing wrong, it's going to become compound fracture. And the guy goes, I know, but they just ignore me. They're ignoring Roger Hillegas right now. And I'm pleading with everybody listening tonight, especially Luann and Robin. I know you reach out to a lot of people. I'm going to get off my soapbox here in a minute. Please. Reach out to the sheriff of Washoe County. He's the worst of the stitch on the boar hog, but reach out to him anyway. Reach out to the Washoe County Board of Commissioners. They're worthless as tits on the boar hog because they refuse to respond back to a lot of emails. The local media. I had one person yesterday said, hell, tell us about what's going on. And all of a sudden, presto, change of poof, she's gone. You know why? Because Matt knows this. She works at Channel 4 with worthless Kim Burrows and worthless Joe Hart. I hope they're listening tonight because I'm naming names. Then we had the alcoholic reporter from KOLO. Matt is the one who learned he wouldn't say his name. I'm saying his name tonight. Ed Pierce, you're a drunk. Okay, I know it. You want to sue me? Go ahead, sue me. I don't care because names need to be named now. People need to be brought. Identify, expose.
Actually, Stuart, you need to sue him.
Wrongfully, you know, and this whole thing is just so upsetting to us. Hey, let's go ahead and bring on another caller. I think there's a 270 number that wants to join us.
You want me to hang up there? I'll be more than happy to hang up.
Right. 270
okay,
number?
Hi. How is everybody?
Hi. Hi. Thanks for
Hello,
coming on.
Hello, and to the gentleman that's on tonight, when you reached out and put your father into guardianship, you had no idea, and none of us know until you're left helpless by them, till they've made it where your bank account's depleted, you know that you can't call the FBI, the CIA, Ghostbusters, it doesn't matter, but nobody knows until then, so don't feel bad about that, you had no idea, you were talking about legislation. I think that I'm going somewhere with this. So I wanted to say a smear campaign, but it couldn't be called a smear campaign. So I would call it a blanket campaign to bring awareness to people, to target people that are ages 50 plus, to make aware. We want to make them aware. We want to recruit them to help us. And I think that we need to teach them to strike on a financial level. There has to be something because.
In answer to your question, we need to have legislation in each of our state capitals that have real teeth penalties for these kinds of abuses. And that
so
includes,
my,
not only a judge being impeached, but facing jail time.
Yes, and the thing that I'm afraid of is I think that the legislation, they know, because the Bar Association is in bed with legislation for more than one reason, and ours is a small fish to them out at the good old boy buffet. But they know. They know that we are a squeaky wheel. You know, the Bar Association plays a, you know, I think that we've tried, I might be getting my government stuff mixed up, but we tried to go before legislation, and the Bar Association will cough and sneeze or make some, you know, touch their eyeball, and then they're like, well, we're out of time today. I might be mistaken, but.
No, you're not.
You know, I think that they know.
They wield that much power. They do.
Yeah, and they do. With the Bar Association looking at the legislation that we so hope to use words like abuse and, you know, illegal, they don't care. Once our darling people are under guardianship, conservatorship, whatever, it doesn't matter if they throw them down a flight of stairs, as long as their heart's still ticking, they can still take money out of that bank account. So it doesn't matter to them. They're protected. Their families are protected, so they're not really worried about it. I think that we need to if we can go to places, we can go to, I don't know where to go. We can go to Sandals Resort and set up a booth and talk to people that have money and be like, hey, are you enjoying your tutti frutti cocktail? Well, come here and let me tell you what can happen to you. And yes, I know you have an amazing law firm, and yes, you've been paying them money, but why don't you stop paying them money until we all know that we're safe? Why don't we stop paying our lawyers money? Screw them. Good luck. If I die and I don't have a will, give it to the library. I don't care. I really could care less.
You know, and
less.
That's
I'd
the thing
the
I want to
library have it.
Yeah. That's the thing I want to touch on tonight, by the way. I'm glad you brought that up about a will or a trust in that. Well, I was talking earlier to Matthew, and he was saying that in his case, they said all this happened because he didn't have a power of attorney. He didn't have a trust. He didn't have any of that. Well, to tell you the truth, we had all of that in my family.
Yep.
And they still said my mom was not able to take care of herself, and that's why they gave her a limited guardian, who was still able to go after our trust and everything we worked for. So my question is to everybody on this radio show tonight, do you think it matters if you have a trust or will? Because today on the summit they're saying you have to have a trust, you have to have a will, you have to have POA. But then we had that, and it did not happen. They took everything from us anyway, pretty much. So what do you guys think on that?
Well, I'll jump in first. I'll be first in line because, and again, if I have any virgin ears listening in Radio Land, I'll give you my story concerning my dad. In 2003, my dad was living with his girlfriend in Orlando. He got up. He took a shower. He put on his suit. He said goodbye to his girlfriend. He went to his attorney's office, who is also his accountant. He knew what he wanted. He had it put into writing, his will, his power of attorney, his pre-need guardian. He paid his attorney / accountant, shook his hands, and when my father left that office, he was confident that his wants and needs in case of incapacity would be met. And the first thing that was thrown out / suspended was my father's power of attorney and advance directive. So, you know, it's good. It's like it's a barrier that can be knocked down. So, I mean, that's one thing to me that if you give me five cases that they've been honored, I would be shocked, because it's usually that they're thrown out on the onset of any guardianship.
Right. I'm faring with you as well, because in my family, we had a power of attorney, we had a trust, We had a will. We had everything drawn out 10 years before. We kept paying into the trust. We kept paying none of that. It did not matter because my mom, they said, she's not able to take care of herself even though she has four daughters and three other kids. She's not able to take care of herself. Well, who do you think was taking care of my mom for like 50 years prior? So I do believe right. that you go ahead and do your will. Go ahead and I would definitely not ever have a trust. But I would say do a will, put as many roadblocks in there as you can, as much as you can, because I think either way it's going to be twisted to fit however they want to take that money from your estate. I mean, that's my thought. That's right. my opinion.
No.
Because
I've heard
so many different things on this show. Yeah,
I agree.
Robin.
Right. Let me just very quickly, Robin, exactly what Luann said. Go ahead. Have your documents prepared. You've got them. Also, another add-on that I would do, film yourself. Every corner of the room that you're in so that it can't be said that there was undue influence and have that as well. But just know that that is not a foolproof thing, that it can be thrown out.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, I want to, because it's what we're discussing, I want to touch on this. The reality is that when you're in one of these courtrooms that we're talking about, it's a kangaroo court. It's a false, it's a pretend operation. It's kabuki theater. It's phony. It's bogus. However, the more you can make it difficult for the criminal to rob you, the better off you may be. Now, that what I mean by that is...
Yeah, you're an ethical player,
Yes, go ahead and get all of your documents in order.
Mm-hmm.
And then get all of your money in foreign bank accounts. And then get all of your properties into corporations that are owned by other corporations that are owned by other corporations that are owned by other corporations. And, you know, I mean...
Put your money under the bed.
Make every possible obstacle as deep and hard and ungainly as you possibly can, because you're dealing with unethical criminals who are going to work just as hard as you are to rob you. And it may be that all of your preparations come to naught, but it also may be that if you are difficult enough to attack, they may say, gee whiz, we're trying to pick the weak ones in the herd. We kind of screwed up here. Let's go after somebody else.
Yeah, and if you do have all of your estate documents done, they're going to say, well, you've been exploiting your mom and your dad, too. They said that
to
me.
Oh, I know. That's the thing.
Accusations.
Even when you have all kinds of documentation, it doesn't matter. And the reason it doesn't matter is because in these courts, these judges are the king of the hill. They are the king of the kingdom, and they may make whatever they want happen. And because the only oversight on a judge is another level of judge, they know that the chances that they're going to face any recriminations or problems, for even if they are involved in criminal activity, they know that the man that's going to be judging, or the woman that's going to be judging them, is their old buddy from the golf course that they played golf with every Sunday and that they ski with during the winter. That's their buddy. They're not going to come down on them. And they know where the skeletons are in their closet, too.
Yeah,
so that it's a big club of people that have a bunch of dirt on each other, and they protect each other's back.
Well, and also, when we were listening to that summit today, we did get a lot of good information on that, by the way, with Lisa McCarley and like seven or eight people came on there, really good people, you know. But they said all what it takes is a few accusations. And then that is going to be giving
allegations,
accusations, all of it. All it takes is for them to overdo your will, your trust, and all that.
Right. Allegations are sufficient
in a court where they do not require rules of evidence, and we're talking about civil courts. Well, that, you know, you put in front of a judge allegations, and the judge goes, well, you seem trustworthy to me, so be it, and bangs his gavel, and that's that, or her gavel, and now you have your new ward. Hi, yes, I'm your guardian. I'll be taking you to your new home now. Just go ahead and hand over your keys, and I'll take keys to your car, too. You won't be needing that anymore. And no, you don't have to pack a bag. There's clothes there from the people that just died that we'll give you when we get to the home you're going into. You know,
anyway,
right, but
let's get back here to.
If I could just
go ahead.
Something those things.
Go ahead,
you.
Hillary.
I agree, and you know I agree. I can't believe that I am saying, but it is the truth. There are good lawyers out there. There are few and far between. I was at a hearing today on Zoom concerning a young man, and his lawyer, court-appointed Office of Conflict in Palm Beach, he called me because one of the relatives said, you know, you should speak to Ms. Hogue. She knows a lot about guardianship, this, that, and the other. And most attorneys would say, you know, tell her to go fuck herself. You know, but this attorney, he wanted to know what I had to say. And he listened, and he thanked me for what I was doing gratis to help people in the worst, more than likely, situation that they will ever be in their life. So I have to give this attorney kudos. And he said he would be retiring soon. And I was distraught thinking that he would no longer be helping, because we have so few attorneys in probate that will risk their careers to fight the good fight.
Hillary, make sure that he doesn't retire.
I'm going to try
that. Because you can count them on one hand.
It's that, yes.
Right. You know, it's like Leslie Federico.
Yes.
Look what's going on with her, man, that she's... She got 9 victims out of guardianship, and now they're just coming down on her, the bar, and oh my gosh. And she's good at what she does, you know, and I do believe she will prevail. I really do. Because what she did was just step for her clients, you know?
Yep. But
even the attorneys are not even, it's scary for them as well. Yeah, I'm just saying.
Well, yeah, that
right.
is something
and
that we need to be cognizant of. If you're an attorney and you're doing the right thing in a probate court where really it's more corrupt than not, then the chances that you will face consequences that will be adverse for you is very high. I mean, when we traveled with the Judicial Performance Commission around the state, we went all over the state when they had meetings, public meetings, and we attended 7 out of the 10 meetings that they had personally, me and Luann. And in the 7 meetings that we attended, there were no less than 4 either attorneys or former attorneys who came in to say, I fear for my job. I'm not able to advocate for these people in these probate courts, because the judge will put me, you know, will put all my cases at the end of the docket, will push me down, will rule against me, and I've seen it over and over, and they're
terrible.
pushing me out of this business, and the other attorneys line up against us and push us out. So when I say this is happening to attorneys, it's not my opinion. It is my opinion, but it is based on my observations and discussions with those who are in the trenches facing the reality of it.
Exactly, and it's a good thing to bring up too. I'm about ready to say that we have about 10 minutes or so left to the radio show. I think this is really good that we're bringing awareness to Roger Hillegas. We're bringing notification to them that please help this man. Please help Stuart Haney for just rescuing a woman. The problem is I have with that whole thing is they never looked into Susan Hillegas.
they never asked her what she had to say. They never even talked to her. They just looked at her as a ward of the state. Don't talk to her.
Yes, it was as if,
you know,
as if these gentlemen have stolen our property.
Yeah.
They didn't even consider that this is a human being.
No one bothered to talk to that I know of. I mean, because if they did, she would have said, I love my son. He wouldn't have done any of this.
He did what was right for me. He rescued me from a bad situation.
That's exactly what would have happened to Luann.
Go ahead and talk about that.
Yep. Well,
I've got Stuart done with this too as well.
Yeah, there's police reports there that basically there was plenty of opportunity to interview Susan Hillegas. They could have interviewed her in Southern California, and they could have taken a report down there. They could have interviewed her when she got back to Reno. And the scary thing is, and this ties into everything, she did not die in the facility that she was brought back to. She died in the third facility. And why I'm saying this tonight is because my friend from high school who owned the second facility, and I did not know he owned one until I called him after Susan had died because we had missed our lunch date. We were supposed to go to lunch the week I got arrested. And he goes, Stu, your name's all over news. What the hell, blah, blah, blah. He goes, you want to hear something crazy? That lady, Susan Hillegas. I go, what about her? She came here. I go, Dave, what are you talking about here? He goes, I own Artesian Gardens. And I go, what? I didn't know that. He goes, yeah, she was brought here. I said, well, what happened? She says, well, she was upset and sad because she pulled away from her son and she made statements about that. Well, I said, Dave, then how the hell did she die? She goes, Stewie. He goes, Stewie, she didn't die here. I go, what do you mean? She goes, Robin, the daughter came in, said the rules were too restrictive and pulled her out of there. 2 weeks later, she was dead. Now, you do the math, folks. Remember, one shot of morphine, two shot of morphines, and you're bye-bye. They put her in hospice. They got her on morphine. And they administered, I believe, to this day, they administered that second shot. She was cremated. No toxicology report. No autopsy report. Why? They shut her up. They would have shot Roger in Southern California, as Robin knows. They green-lighted him. Had it by an open carry the day I was arrested, they would have shot me. So now all they have left is to go after Roger and to go after Stu. Well, I'm out, and I'm chirping like a damn bird. And Roger's inside, and his health is declining. I'm out right now only because I decided to give the extortion money, but that's the last I'm giving of it. And the sad thing is they didn't interview Susan Hillegas. Why? Because they didn't want the truth on record, period.
Yeah. You know, and I've always wondered about that. I'm glad you guys cleared that up. Do you know if he's able to get letters? Do they give people letters? Can you send him anything, Roger Hillegas? Do you know anything about that?
Yes. Yes, but you remember now, I was in there. They mm-hmm. they were very cagey about how certain things got to you. Again, a point taken right here at the top of the rung of the ladder. He is needing medical help from qualified physicians. There is nobody in that facility that's qualified to treat Roger Hillegas. He has to go to a hospital. He has to go to an ER room, and they're refusing to. This is inhumane treatment. This is the stuff at Nazi concentration camps. And Matt, both you and I know, I've called these assisted care living centers the modern-day Auschwitz, and I got chastised for that. Well, screw you, people, okay? You want to come for me? Come. I'm ready. But Roger's situation is a whole different. His health is declining. We're bolstering as best we can, but they run the show in there. And once you go in through those locked doors, it's a whole different world and a whole different ballgame. If you don't listen to what they say and you don't run by their rules, you're screwed. They can take away anything privilege-wise from you at any point in time, and then you're down. And it happened to me. So I'm speaking from experience. It happened to me. I made a small set of circumstantial words to Matt Scarlatus one night. Next thing you know, I'm on suicide watch, took my bed, took my clothes off me. He said, hey, take your clothes off. I go, what for? He goes, listen, Stu, if you don't take your clothes off, we'll take them off for you. I go, whoa. What the hell are you doing? I believe the same circumstances exist right now for Roger, and I'm worried. I'm worried for his health.
So who do you turn to? Who do you turn to out there in Reno, Nevada, to get to bring awareness to this? Is it just everybody's corrupt and there's nothing we can do, or what can people do?
You rock the boat, like Robin and you have said, Luann and Matt saying tonight. You rock that damn boat. You call up the news station, say, why are you reporting this? This man's in obvious distress. Did you see him in the wheelchair? Oh, you didn't, because you didn't show up in court. Why? Because you're told not to. Okay? You hit the sheriff's department. You hit the board of commissioners. I mean, I've already sent, within the last few days, I sent two or three. And I'm telling you what, I'm not pulling any punches with these people. I said, do your job, or we'll find someone to do your job for you, Washington County Board of Commissioners. You notify the attorney general. I sent a missive out today to Governor Lombardo's office. I said, hey, there's some serious stuff you better be aware of, because it's going to come raining down your parade. I called the DOJ today, and everything was going smooth until he says, well, you represent my counsel. Yeah, he goes, oh, well, you have an attorney. We have nothing more to say. Goodbye, click. That's how the phone conversation ended. And Allie was sitting right next to me. I went, did you believe that? So you keep rocking the boat with whatever avenues available to you. And, again, identify. We have identified them. Expose them. We're doing that now. And then you take them down. And I mean, we got to take down one of the key players here. And if this is the case to launch into other cases, so be it. Or if this is the case that's going to be in the secondary phase, so be it. But this case deserves attention, because my co-defendant, my friend, life hangs in the balance right now as we speak.
Right. Right. And I just want to let everybody know that we have 18 different states that are listening in tonight. 18 different states. I think that's pretty cool. I really do. So if we can get every one of those states to call in and say where they're from, I think this will put some pressure on them. You know what I mean?
Call the Washoe County.
Call the Washoe County.
Right?
Yeah, Washoe County. Everybody from all these different states on. We have an 863, 858, 847, 904, 303, 914, 602, 773, 239. We got them all. We got a whole bunch of them here. So if we can
I am imploring everybody
to
reach
in,
out.
Everybody to do that. You know, the only thing I think of, what do you think of, Matthew? I mean, what do you think? You know?
No,
we're doing
everything we can, you know? Again, numbers are important always, Luann. I'm going to be candid about that. I've had this conversation with Stewart a number of times. You've got activism is so important, and especially during legislative seasons. By the way,
I agree.
Roger,
well, we've got a couple minutes to show left.
Yeah, Roger's trying to call me on my phone.
Go ahead and get it.
Wow. Yeah.
No. He just hung up.
That's the problem, too.
There is no two-way calling. When you go behind those bars, they have to have your number, and they're the only ones that can make contact. It's not reciprocal. So that's another side effect of it.
All right, and Matt, you know this as well as anybody else. If they detect a third party listening in or any background noise, they will terminate the call and they will put you on restriction, period. End of story.
Right. Yep.
Oh, my gosh. So it's like
that happened many times with Matt and I.
It doesn't sound like America, you know. It just doesn't sound like, you know, every morning I wake
no,
up and I think,
like,
gosh, my
it's like
God.
We're
what,
living,
what?
It's like we're living in Alexander Solzhenitsyn's Gulag Archipelago.
It really is.
It is. Well said,
because I was thinking about Soviet Russia during the early communist regimes that I remember growing up as a child hearing about.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I say this every day, and it's not just with our judicial system. It's with everything we're doing. It's our medical society. It's falling apart. You know, our food industry, everything. I mean, I wake up things like, you got to avoid this, you got to avoid that, you can't eat this, you can't do this, you can't talk this, you can't, you know, all day long. It's like, what?
No, and the worst contradiction is the backdrop.
Is that
language in the Constitution. We had, at one time, the most powerful government in the world because of the genius of those laws that protected us, that gave us our individual freedoms, that gave us those rights. And now everything is an absolute contradiction to those words.
Yeah. Hey, there was a 386 number. I don't know if I brought them in. A 386 had their hand up for a while. would you like to say anything on the air while we're here? 386. I don't know if you had your hand up for a reason.
386?
386.
You are live on the air. You noticed your hand was up. Did you have a question or comment?
Go ahead. Hello? My eyes sound like they're sleeping. Okay, let's go ahead and keep them sleeping.
You might be sleeping.
I've had that happen before. Okay, so I guess we're going to go ahead and go back to Matthew real quick. So what is it? I really appreciate you coming on and telling your story of what happened to you. You understand. You get it. You know exactly what's going on. And we really applaud you for helping out Roger and Stuart. And they just did not stop talking about you. They talk about that you're honorable, you're sensitive to the subject, you know what's going on. What do you want to see happen? What do you want to see happen before we go off the air tonight?
Everything that you spoke to, Robin spoke to, and that Hillary spoke to, we have to get meaningful numbers. We have to get people to engage in this and understand that this can be them, even if it hasn't happened to them yet. And you know, I don't know what that formula is going to be, but I think it's going to have to be a mix of the technology we use every day. We're absorbed inside of our computers. Unfortunately, it is a blessing and a curse. I mean, it's a very powerful tool. It affords us the opportunity to speak remotely to anybody we want to, for the most part, and all those social media sites are really invaluable, but they are tools, and only tools. And ultimately, we have to have a hybrid or a mixture of effort where we engage people socially again, the way our parents and our grandparents did. And
right.
We have to communicate like we used to before we were cloistered in a room and we were self-absorbed in Facebook and Instagram and the rest of that. They're important, but we lose sight of the fact that they are just tools. And we have to stay focused. And we have to use a combination of things to get the word out and to get people to pay attention. And I don't think I'm far from mastering that yet. I think oftentimes I'm a much better observer than I am in coming up with a game plan that's gonna fix it all. We've got a lot of work to do.
Right, exactly. But we do invite you back to the show anytime you do have an update, or just, you know, text me or email me and just keep in touch with us on the update on Roger and Stuart. Anytime you have to come on air, we will go ahead and take your phone call in. We do want to keep on top of the story, and we want all these different states that have called into our show tonight to listen, to make sure you call the Washoe County and Reno, Nevada, and ask them what's going on with them. Why is this happening? I think that's the best thing we can do for now. You agree?
That's a promise. I look forward keeping you abreast of what's going on. And again, this is a very, very important case. And while
right.
you know you've been very, very kind to me in letting me share my story. Hillary has done so much more than I ever have, and I guess this particular case.
I will argue with you on that because I.
Hillary, I was just gonna say by comparison,
it's not more.
But this case is really an important one because of the circumstances and the fate of Susan Hillegas. What ultimately happened to her. And what has transpired, and the horror show that followed after her death, which was untimely, like my father's.
Right.
And it's not necessarily getting every grain of sand on the beach. Sometimes you get the standout granule of sand that shines better than every other one, and you work with what you have. This case is one of those that I really do believe that if Washoe County DA's office and that judge were ever to be successful, it's going to be a very, very bad day for the rest of us, because it has no business going to trial. It never did. And we have to call attention and marshal the forces, hopefully, for people to be more attentive and understand that this can be them, and that this is an awful, awful case of law that needs to be dealt with.
I agree. And if I could just say one thing, because, and again, I'll be brief, but I'll never forget, and Robin and Luann, you've heard this before, I was on the car line waiting for my children at school. They were, I believe at the time, 8 and 11, and old Sam Sugar, my father, was supposed to be adjudicated a ward of the state of Florida in, I believe, maybe 4 or 5 days. And Dr. Sugar said to me at the time, the only way you can get it, he goes, it's too late. He goes, the only way you'll ever get him out of this is to leave the state or the country. And I couldn't. I mean, at the time, I couldn't. I had a mortgage. I had young kids in school. But looking back, you know, that would have been the right alternative. And with Roger and his mother, he did what we always say, and it sounds a little bit cringy, but get the body, get your mother, get your father, get your loved one, take them. Because more times than not, the only way out, if you don't do that, is through death. So you can only commend someone who has the guts to go in and take their parent or loved one out of the worst situation in their life, being surrounded by strangers who don't give a shit about them. So, you know, he is a hero, Roger. He, you know, maybe everything wasn't correct that he did, but in the end, he did everything, and everything was that one common denominator, his mother. He loved his mother, and he saved his mother, and he's being punished for it, which is horrific.
Yeah, I agree with you. You couldn't have said it any better than that. I mean, I agree with you. He's a very honorable man. Both of these men that are in the Washoe County, both of them are very honorable men, and we need to stick by them as much as we can. So just come on to our radio show. Anybody that ever has an update on these two men, please come on and let us know what's going on. Like I say, we'll be here every Wednesday night. You know, justice requires transparency and accountability. And giving up is not an option, everybody. We don't give up here. Go ahead.
Giving up is not an option.
Giving up is not an option, man.
Justice requires transparency and accountability.
Right. You are listening to Faces Radio, everybody, on the Hidden Truth Revealed on Blog Talk Radio. Just remember that you can find us on Twitter. You can find us. We're also been going up on TikTok lately. We've been going up on different platforms to get the word out. You can find us on Faces, Families Against Support Embezzlement, Unethical Standards, Faces. It's up on Facebook. And remember, all these, all of our shows are recorded and they're archived. So you can go back to Hidden Truth Revealed on Blog Talk Radio. Get all the shows you want to listen to. Send them to your friends. Let them know that this is real. Everything's going on that we say is going on in our courtrooms. So we'll be here again next week, right?
Thank you for tuning in. We appreciate you. We love you. We stand with you.
And we'll be, we're going to go ahead and play the song I wanted to you guys got to listen to this. It's called Judicial Integrity Project. We played this in front of the Supreme Court with the Judicial Integrity Project saying you don't know your judge. So listen to this, everybody, if you want to. I love this part. Here we go. Good night, everybody.
Transparency.
We demand transparency
and accountability.
And accountability
in every judge from sea to sea.
In every judge from sea to sea.
We just want integrity.
We just want integrity.
Judicial hides a lot from you.
Judicial hides a lot from you.
There's not much in public view.
There's not much in public view.
From this darkness they won't budge.
From this darkness they won't budge.
That's why you don't know your judge.
That's why you don't know your judge.
From this darkness they won't budge.
From this darkness they won't budge.
That's why you don't know your judge.
That's why you don't know your judge.